7 days glided away, everyone marking its course by the henceforth rapid alteration of Edgar Linton's state. The havoc that months had previously wrought was now emulated by the inroads of hours. Catherine, we would have fain deluded yet, but her own quick spirit refused to delude her. It divined in secret and brooded on the dreadful probability, gradually ripening into certainty. She had not the heart to mention her ride when Thursday came round. I mentioned it for her and obtained permission to order her out of doors. For the library where her father stopped a short time daily, the brief period he could bear to sit up, and his chamber had become her whole world. She grudged each moment that did not find her bending over his pillow or seated by his side. Her countenance grew wan with watching and sorrow, and my master gladly dismissed her to what he flattered himself would be a happy change of scene and society, drawing comfort from the hope that she would not now be left entirely alone after his death.
HPPodcraft.com.
You know, illness can really bring people to some bad choices.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, I've been wondering about the illnesses in this book. Catherine was sick, and Edgar, Hindley's wife, they're always wasting away, and it's not particularly said what it is that's killing them.
Consumption?
Yeah, it could be typhoid fever, tuberculosis maybe. I mean, these are all things that affected Emily's personal life, even cancer. I think her mother died of cancer.
Yeah.
Or, thinking about when I was editing the show last week, Linton blatantly said in that last episode, I can't sit in a chair. So listening to that passage just now, it talks about Edgar, how he stops in the library every day to painfully sit for a brief period. I think this family's being killed by sitting in chairs. It's pretty clear when you really look into it.
Ah, oh, dude.
I'm going to tell people, if you're on the fence about buying a stand-up desk, read Wuthering Heights.
There you go.
You'll get it.
Dude, it's PhD time for you.
I think so.
You got your thesis, man. It's right there.
Stand-up desks and some beanbag chairs, and this family would have been much happier.
This family being from Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights, a story H.P. Lovecraft loved so dearly that we are talking about it and have been talking about it here on the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
Here at HPPodcraft.com, I am Chad Pfeiffer.
And I'm Chris Lackey. And our reader is Rachel Lackey.
Yes.
And she knows a thing or two about unbridled passion. She's married to me.
Yeah. You know where I see the most unbridled passion? It's when I'm waiting in line at an amusement park. There are always so many teenagers making out. My wife always wants to go to the amusement parks, and I'm like, I can't stand it anymore. You have to wait in line for an hour, and it's hot, and you just have teenagers ramming their faces into each other like confused fish. You know what I mean? It's like, I can't stand watching it.
Wait, you think that's hot?
No, it's hot outside.
Oh, okay.
Because it's summertime.
Now I understand. Yeah.
No, I don't find it hot. But, you know, that made me feel uncomfortable to talk about somehow, so... Let's get back to this book, which is about teenagers making out, essentially.
Yeah, this is chapter 27 here. Edgar is getting really, really sick.
Right. And one important point here, you're saying that Edgar, last week I think you said he was taking crazy pills when he agreed to let Catherine marry Linton, but he doesn't really know the kid.
No.
And right here in this chapter, it says, he had a fixed idea, I guessed by several observations he let fall, that, as his nephew resembled him in person, he would resemble him in mind. For Linton's letters bore few or no indications of his defective character. Edgar thinks possibly that Linton is just a lot like him. So this is a good marriage.
Yeah.
That his nature won out over Heathcliff's. But we know it didn't.
And he's making this judgment on like seeing him for about 10 minutes and then reading some letters that he wrote.
Right. So
to a chick that he wants to bang.
That's right. That's right. So,
crazy pills.
Maybe, yeah, crazy pills are still in order, but everybody else decides just to let Edgar go ahead and think that.
Catherine doesn't really want to leave her father, but she's supposed to meet Linton, so she does.
Yeah.
Nellie's with her. Linton and Catherine talk. Linton is really nervous about something as they're talking. Now, again, she was supposed to meet him halfway on the moors, not at Wuthering Heights.
Right.
When they get there and he's there and she's talking to him, he keeps looking back over his shoulder at Wuthering Heights. He breaks down eventually and says, Heathcliff has been forcing me to come here and court Catherine. And I'm afraid if she doesn't marry me, that Heathcliff is going to mess me up.
He's afraid of everything. In this scene, it's like comical almost how he's carrying on. Everything's terrible. And she says, all right, calm down. Or I don't remember what she says, but she reaches for him and he like lunges back because he's afraid Catherine is going to hit him. She's like, well, I'm not going to hit you, man. It's driving her crazy, but he's just rolling around. And, you know, he's scared to death that Heathcliff is going to show up and see what he's up to. And that's exactly what happens.
Heathcliff shows up and then he asks about Edgar's health. Mm-hmm. Heathcliff says that, you know, he's worried Linton might die before Edgar.
Right.
Heathcliff then asks them to come back to Wuthering Heights and spend some time with Linton. Catherine says, you know, I'm not allowed. My dad said I can't go over there. Mm-hmm. And she's scared of Heathcliff, but she still goes with him.
There's a lot of manipulating going on. Heathcliff is saying, look at him. He's so sick. He needs companionship.
And Linton is practically crying because he's just so afraid of Heathcliff. Yeah. And I would be too.
There's this great line. He says, has the whelp been playing that game long? I did give him some lessons about sniveling.
Oh.
But Heathcliff, as I said, he's using Linton's poor health to manipulate the women and get them to enter Wuthering Heights.
Yeah.
Nellie says, Catherine walked in and I stood waiting till she had conducted the invalid to a chair. A chair?
Oh.
May as well just kill him now. Anyway, Heathcliff shoves Nellie inside. He shoves her inside. He goes, hey, there's nothing wrong with this place. We don't bite. Come on in. Locks the door.
Yeah.
And it becomes clear pretty quick that they've become prisoners.
He's trapped them in the house.
And I was kind of happy about this because it was some definite action. There was no conniving here. This was just straight up, I'm locking you up until you do what I want.
Yeah.
And Heathcliff does also, he's almost like a Lovecraftian villain here. He says, Miss Linton, take your seat by him. I give you what I have. The present is hardly worth accepting, but I have nothing else to offer. It is Linton, I mean. How she does stare. It's odd what a savage feeling I have to anything that seems afraid of me. Had I been born where laws are less strict and tastes less dainty, I should treat myself to a slow vivisection of those two as an evening's amusement.
Holy cow.
Whoa. He just talked about dissecting his son and his lover's daughter while they are alive.
Yeah.
Just to pass the evening. I admit, I was a little shocked when he said that.
Yeah.
That was pretty extreme, what he's talking about there. And of course, yeah, he follows this up with some serious actual domestic abuse. Catherine tries to get the key from him to open the door. It's in his hand. She scratches and finally bites at his hand, so he opens it up. She grabs the key, but then he seized her with the liberated hand and, pulling her on his knee, administered with the other a shower of terrific slaps on both sides of the head. The scene was over in 2 minutes. Catherine, released, put her two hands to her temples and looked just as if she were not sure whether her ears were off or on.
Oh,
he just beat her about the head, neck, and chest area for that key. Then he says, I'm going to go get your horses. Lynn was scared of Heathcliff, but once Heathcliff has established his dominance, he really kind of regains his composure, which is crazy. He's not as sniveling anymore.
Right.
And he's like, let's have some tea. Would you get me some tea? Even though they're imprisoned, he's like, get me some tea. This is my favorite part. Catherine pushes some tea towards him and he says, now, Catherine, you are letting your tears fall into my cup. I won't drink that. Give me another.
Wow.
He doesn't want the tea with her tears in it. And she does. She gets him another tea. And then Linton says, you know, y'all can't leave until Catherine marries me. Nellie says, she's going to marry you. She's beautiful. She's young. You're a little perishing monkey, she calls him. The whole thing. I forgot. This is one of the best chapters in the book just because nobody's holding it in here. Zilla, that's the housekeeper, he sent her away. So her room is open. And I believe that's where he locks them up.
Yeah, he locks them up. At first, it's Catherine and Nellie in the same room, but then he lets Catherine out.
Out of the room, anyway.
Out of the room, not out of the house. Nellie's stuck there for 5 days by herself. And the only person that, I guess, takes her wee and poo out and feeds her is Hareton.
Yeah, and he doesn't want to talk to her about it. He's just doing his job.
So chapter 28, there is a jailbreak where Zilla has a map of the house tattooed on her back. And when she gets back inside...
I don't think that happened.
Are you sure?
You're thinking of either Prison Break or Waterworld. There was another back tattoo that gave directions in the film as well.
Yes, mm-hmm. I was thinking of Waterworld.
Waterworld's what you were thinking. Well, a lot of people get that confused.
Waterworld and Wuthering Heights.
W titles.
Exactly.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit? All of them.
So Zilla tells her that word in town is that Catherine and Nellie were lost out in the marsh.
Yeah.
So people think they're dead. Once Nellie's out, she looks for Catherine in the house and finds Linton, who says Catherine is locked away in another room. Mm-hmm. And also, Catherine and Linton are married.
Yep. They got it done.
Oh, no. And she missed it. She missed the wedding. Linton brags about it, saying that all of Kat's stuff is now his stuff. And Edgar is going to be dead soon, and he's going to have it all.
He says, you know, Dad told me not to be so kind to Catherine, so I'm not. He's just sucking on this, like, stick of sugar candy the whole time. And he says, I don't like being around her right now anyway. She's just crying all the time. Like, what gives?
God.
In fact, one time he was like, if you don't stop crying, I'm going to tell Heathcliff. She doesn't care. So he calls Heathcliff in, who doesn't want anything to do with this. Heathcliff comes in, and he says he hit her like a dog or a horse, punches the crap out of her, and then leaves. She shows Linton how he split her mouth open on the inside. side against her teeth. It's really savage stuff. I mean, this is a crime that's been, this is like serious criminal stuff that's going
on. Dude, there's been crimes going on this whole book. And this one, I don't flip and understand people that are like, oh, I love the passion and the, you know, the romance. And it's like, you guys are insane and have not read the book. He is horrible. He is a monster.
It's funny that we're saying this is criminal stuff. Some of the early reviewers of this book, and most of them did not really disagree with us, by the way, on their take on it, that these awful people.
I was reading some of those.
But one of them said, this was Tate's Edinburgh Magazine wrote, this novel contains undoubtedly powerful writing, and yet it seems to be thrown away. Mr. Ellis Bell, before constructing the novel, should have known that forced marriages under threats and in confinement are illegal, and parties instrumental thereto can be punished. So somebody got really hung up on this.
Yeah.
And second, that wills made by young ladies minors are invalid.
There you go.
The volumes are powerfully written records of wickedness, and they have a moral. They show what Satan could do with the law of entail. This reviewer was mad. The author should have known that this isn't going to stick. Like, just because he did that to her doesn't mean that the marriage is valid. So that was funny. I mean, it's kind of like somebody shooting plot holes in a movie or something.
Right.
For some reason, the reviewer really got hung up on that.
Nellie runs off back to the Grange. She finds Edgar on his deathbed, tells him that she's safe and she's coming home soon. Catherine. Nellie sends the men off to go get her, but they can't. Edgar plans to change his will, and he gets a lawyer in, or he's going to try and get a lawyer in.
Yeah.
Nellie hears someone come in, thinks it's the lawyer, but it's Catherine.
Right.
Edgar sees her before he dies, believing that she's happily married to Linton. The lawyer shows up, but he's too late.
Way too late.
Edgar's gone. He wants to bury Edgar in the family plot, but Nellie insists that he gets buried next to his wife.
Right. Luckily, that's in the will, so it's something that Heathcliff can't deny him. Although he would prefer that it was just he and Catherine in that plot. And Edgar had wanted to change the will to give everything over to Catherine. I believe they say that Heathcliff is down talking to lawyers, so I think he anticipated that. He kept the lawyers from being able to come and help him until after Edgar was dead. Catherine was able to escape because Linton finally helped her out. I guess Nellie's chastising of him had worked. He left her door unlocked, and so at night she snuck out. That's the reason that she's able to visit the Grange. She didn't want to go out the front of Wuthering Heights because, you know, the evil dogs are down there.
Right.
Didn't want to wake them up. So when she snuck out of the room, she went from chamber to chamber trying different windows. And I thought this was interesting. The one place she found the windows open was in her mother's old chamber. And those were the windows through which she escaped. So the same windows that Ghost Catherine was trying to enter in the beginning of the book. I wondered, were those locked?
Maybe not.
But maybe...
maybe Ghost Catherine.
Ghost Catherine unlocked them for her?
Chapter 29, Heathcliff shows up at the funeral to take Kat to Wuthering Heights, where she will have to earn her keep.
Mm-hmm. And he's all mad that Linton let her out. Listen to this, he says, I was embarrassed how to punish him when I discovered his part in the business. He's such a cobweb. A pinch would annihilate him. But you'll see by his look that he has received his due. I brought him down one evening, the day before yesterday, and just set him in a chair and never touched him afterwards. You see? He didn't beat him. He just put him in a chair, and that was torture enough. It says, in 2 hours, I called Joseph to carry him up again, and since then, my presence is as potent on his nerves as a ghost, and I fancy he sees me often, though I am not near. Making him sit in that chair for 2 hours.
Pfeiffer, you've got a thesis, man.
I do.
You gotta write this up. This is for real.
Hey, I'm telling you.
I'm listening. Catherine tells Heathcliff that she and Linton are actually in love, no matter how crappy Heathcliff is to them, and that they will have love, and Heathcliff will never have anyone ever love him again.
That's her real moment of triumph there. However miserable you make us, we shall still have the revenge of thinking that your cruelty arises from your greater misery. You are miserable, are you not? Lonely like the devil. And envious like him. Nobody loves you, and nobody will cry for you when you die. Fair?
Pretty good.
Yeah, she got him. And he calls her a witch for saying that, which we didn't talk about at the beginning of our coverage on this, but remember at the beginning of the book, she does threaten some witchcraft to Joseph.
Oh, right.
She says, I warn you to refrain from provoking me, or I'll ask your abduction as a special favor. Stop. Look here, Joseph, she continued, taking a long, dark book from a shelf. I'll show you how far I've progressed in the black art. I shall soon be competent to make a clear house of it. The red cow didn't die by chance, and your rheumatism can hardly be reckoned among providential visitations. Be off or I'll hurt you seriously. I'll have you all modeled in wax and clay. It's a pretty sophisticated witchcraft wishing.
Yeah, it is.
That's kind of her coping mechanism, I guess, is to be witch-like. But hey, maybe she does know the dark arts.
That would be cool.
Heathcliff has the lawyers fire everybody that had been working for Edgar, except Nellie, who he's going to have watch over the Grange because he wants to rent it out. And of course, Catherine's going to have to come and live at Wuthering Heights, the way that we found her in the beginning of the book.
When they're packing up, Nellie asks Heathcliff if she can work at Wuthering Heights because she wants to stay with Catherine.
And he kind of deflects, but then as he's thinking about it, he looks around the room and he sees this portrait of the elder Catherine that he wants to take to the Heights with him.
Then Heathcliff tells a creepy little tale about Catherine's body.
I'll tell you what I did yesterday. I got the sexton, who was digging Linton's grave, to remove the earth off her coffin lid. And I opened it. I thought once I would have stayed there when I saw her face again. It is hers yet. He had hard work to stir me, but he said it would change if the air blew on it, and so I struck one side of the coffin loose and covered it up. Not Linton's side, damn him. I wish he'd been soldered in lead, and I bribed the sexton to pull it away when I'm laid there, and slide mine out too. I'll have it made so, and then by the time Linton gets to us, he'll not know which is which. You were very wicked, Mr. Heathcliff, I exclaimed. Were you not ashamed to disturb the dead? I disturbed nobody, Nellie, he replied, and I gave some ease to myself. I shall be a great deal more comfortable now, and you'll have a better chance of keeping me underground when I get there. Disturbed her? No, she has disturbed me. Night and day, through 18 years, incessantly, remorselessly, till yesternight, and yesternight I was tranquil. I dreamt I was sleeping the last sleep by that sleeper, with my heart stopped and my cheek frozen against hers.
He goes on to say that he went a little nuts after she died.
A little.
Not really any more nuts than before, in my opinion. He just basically was out, couldn't sleep, being haunted by her visions, by her running out in the moors, yelling Catherine, being all drama and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But he wanted to be reunited with her spirit, so he creeped around her grave a lot, like a lot. And he says,
I'll have her in my arms again. If she be cold, I'll think it is this north wind that chills me. And if she be motionless, it is sleep. I got a spade from the tool house and began to delve with all my might. It scraped the coffin. I fell to work with my hands. The wood commenced cracking about the screws. I was on the point of attaining my object when it seemed that I heard a sigh from someone above, close at the edge of the grave and bending down. If I can only get this off, I muttered. I wish they may shovel in the earth over us both. And I wrenched at it more desperately still. There was another sigh close at my ear. I appeared to feel the warm breath of it displacing the sleet-laden wind. I knew no living thing in flesh and blood was by, but as certainly as you perceive the approach to some substantial body in the dark, though it cannot be discerned, so certainly I felt that Cathy was there, not under me, but on the earth. A sudden sense of relief flowed from my heart through every limb. I relinquished my labour of agony and turned consoled at once, unspeakably consoled. Her presence was with me. It remained while I refilled the grave and led me home.
I like that he was unspeakably consoled.
But he just spoke about it.
Yeah.
So he runs back to Wuthering Heights into his bedroom, which is Catherine's old bedroom, and he feels her with him in the room, and then he sees her. But it's not a loving kind of presence. He says, she showed herself, as she often was in life, a devil to me. And she would show up from time to time. He didn't know when it was going to happen, and it stressed him out. He says it was like constant torture, not knowing when this ghost presence thing would be around. And maybe she was trying to stop him from being a dick?
No, probably. She just wanted to hang out and watch and be a dick to everybody because she's into that. Because
she's a freaking jerk herself. He had to stop sleeping in the room, which was that room was the room that Lockwood was staying in at the beginning of the book, because Catherine would be creeping at the window.
Singing that song. Me into your window.
But now, seeing her body, he feels some of his stress is gone.
Yeah.
And this is him retelling Nellie about this incident that happened, and that all this is kind of past him once he dug up her body and was able to look at her. Nellie again tells him off for messing with the dead. Little Catherine wants Nellie to visit Wuthering Heights, but Heathcliff just shuts her down and says, you know, she'll come to the Grange if she wants a visit.
You know, somewhere, I couldn't find it just quickly before we jumped on, but it had been referenced earlier somewhere in the novel that the bodies buried by Wuthering Heights, they don't decompose normally. It's something in the composition of the ground, or I don't remember what it was, but
yes.
Of course, that reminded me of Lovecraft, that idea of bodies lying full and fat in the ground, like in Randolph Carter or Charles Dexter Ward.
Right, man.
And that's why, of course, he has to break the part of the coffin to let the air in. He wants their heads to decompose together.
Yeah.
So that they're kind of mixed, finally, and actually, yeah. It's the most goth romantic thing, actually. I mean, that, I guess I could see why people were into that. Like, I love you so much. We're going to put our heads together and they're going to decompose into each other.
If you read those sections out of the context of the book, they sound really romantic.
Sickly romantic.
Yeah, but like, and I could see where somebody who wants that kind of passion, who doesn't feel like they have it in the relationship, would find that appealing. But in the context of what a horrible jerk this guy is, it just seems psychotic.
Seems? Well, it is, yeah.
It is psychotic. It is. I feel like the people that seem to really love the love of this book, they're not taking in the big picture, in my opinion.
Sure. It's not a fairy tale. I mean, things are brutally real in this book in a lot of ways. We can't ask the story to be what it's not.
Right.
I can see why people like portions of it. It just does, it's hard to read because everybody's so miserable. And so that's why here, as we approach chapter 30, I started chanting, end, 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 end. I was getting there. And we are almost done with the story.
Nellie hasn't seen Cat's Paw since she left for Wuthering Heights. And the only way that she knows what's going on is by talking to Zilla. So she gets the gossip from her.
Right.
She tells Nellie that Heathcliff has forbidden anyone from being nice or helping Catherine do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And Catherine has to attend the sickly Linton until he died, which eventually he did. Catherine has been aloof from Zilla and Harriton, and she's always fighting with Harriton because, you know, there's that romantic tension going on there.
Yeah, but also she's a prisoner and didn't ever want any of this, so she's not about to try and make nice with anybody when they try to make nice with her.
Well, yeah, most of those guys I don't think they want it either.
Yeah.
Harriton didn't ask for this.
He
just had it all thrust upon him, and, well, Zilla's just kind of a jerk, so I can get why she would blow her off. Anyway, Nellie tells Lockwood that she wants to take Catherine away, but Heathcliff won't allow it, and the only thing that's really going to save Catherine's bacon is that if she gets married to someone else.
Right.
But Nellie doesn't have the power to make that happen. Now we have Lockwood talking to the reader. Nellie's story is over and he's feeling better because he was feeling sick before.
Yeah.
He's going to go out to Wuthering Heights to tell Heathcliff he's leaving the Grange. He's not going to stay there anymore. He doesn't want to put up with this BS and that they're all crazy people. And now you would think during all of this, Heathcliff would kind of just back off and not be so cruel to these people because he's won. But he's even more vile to everyone. Heathcliff does seem unstoppable. He's won, and there's no victory to be had by anybody else. But Kat still doesn't submit to him. She's got the power to give him lip, and there isn't much else that she can do unless she wants to get beaten.
Yeah.
That's the extent of it.
Right.
Also, after his revenge, Heathcliff doesn't really have anything to do. Being petty and mean to people can only keep you busy for so long. So he really has all this time to start thinking about old cats and how she's not there and what good does this do him, treating these people terribly. He's won and he probably still feels like crap. It's a hollow victory for him and he's starting to realize that.
Which is often, I mean, that really is the message of most revenge tales, right? Because it doesn't satisfy you. I mean, what's good about his life now at all? He doesn't have the one thing he always wanted, which was her. And I think you're right. Once he is able to win, then it's all about regressing into the past, the thing that he never got.
So Lockwood goes to Wuthering Heights to say that he's leaving the Grange and to find out how soon before he can get his deposit back. He also has a note from Nellie to give to Catherine. As he brings that in, Harriton snags the note.
Yeah, he does some really, he kind of just throws it at Catherine, trying to be like slick, and it totally doesn't work. She just like, what's that? Knocks it away.
But Kitty cries because Harriton takes it and he realizes it's from Nellie and she wants it. He gives it back to her. Harriton has been trying to learn to read and get an education.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of reading, Kat has been deprived of books by Heathcliff.
Right. This whole scene's pretty painful because Heathcliff had thrown all of her books away. He himself does not read, but he figured out that Catherine likes to read, so that's why he threw all of her books out, just to be cruel. But Harriton stole some, and he's squirreled them away, and he's been trying to teach himself to read with them by looking at a word, looking up the dictionary, sounding it out. Catherine has overheard him doing this. Once again, she rips on him for being illiterate. And Lockwood intervenes. He's trying to make him feel better, but of course Harriton is super embarrassed that she knows about it. A, him trying to read. B, that he even has the books.
Mm-hmm.
So he brings them out, and she doesn't want them.
Yeah.
In fact, she opens one up and she starts imitating him trying to sound out the words.
Jerk.
She gets it for this because Harriton smacks her one for doing that. His self-love would endure no further torment. I heard, and not altogether disapprovingly, a manual cheek given to her saucy tongue.
Whoa.
The little wretch had done her utmost to hurt her cousin's sensitive, though uncultivated, feelings, and a physical argument was the only one he had of balancing the account and repaying its effects on the inflictor. Then he takes the books and throws them in the fire and burns them all. Ugh. That's that fun romantic interplay that you were talking about, huh?
Yeah, it's cute.
Well, I always say, like, when I'm watching something and the guy smacks the woman at the beginning, oh, they're going to end up together. When he smacks the woman and burns all of her books, I go, yep. They don't know it now, but they complete each other.
So Heathcliff comes back, because he wasn't there when Lockwood showed up.
Right.
Notices Hareton is really looking like his aunt Catherine.
Yes.
That's something that just kind of hits him. This resemblance makes Heathcliff question his sexuality, so he can't bear to look at Hareton.
I don't know, but that's the kids.
No?
Well, they talk about both Catherine and Hareton really resemble Elder Catherine. You know, she's her daughter, and he's her nephew. Heathcliff will come in and they'll both raise their eyes to him and he can't stand it because it's like, yeah, double Catherine's looking at him.
We have this fun meal with Lockwood and the gang, and by fun I mean miserable.
During that meal, Lockwood says, all right, I want out. I don't want to be staying here anymore. And Heathcliff goes, that's fine, but you're still paying the lease through the year, like you said you, yeah, would. He's not going to let him out of it.
When he's leaving, Lockwood thinks of, like, how great of a storybook ending it would have been if he would have, like, scooped up Catherine and married her.
Yeah.
But he doesn't.
He could have taken her off to the city to live the fun life, but that's just not the way it worked out.
That's not what happened.
And then Lockwood, sometime later, they cut forward. He hasn't been back for a while.
Late in that winter, 1802, and he comes back, and it's autumn of 1802, so it's almost a year. He's writing in his diary that he's been traveling out on the moors and that he hits the Grange to see Nellie.
Yeah, well, and also he's still paying for the place because of Heathcliff making him stick to the lease. So he thinks,
well, sure,
I might as well stay there instead of an inn. I'm already paying for it. So
yeah,
he shows up and people are pretty surprised that he's there.
When he gets there, Nellie's not there anymore, mm-hmm, and she's living at Wuthering Heights.
Yeah.
So he goes to Wuthering Heights to see Nellie and get the news, find out what's going on. Zilla left Wuthering Heights, probably due to some showgirls style stair pushing, I'm guessing. Heathcliff hired Nellie to take her place.
When he gets to Wuthering, he overhears Kathy and Hareton doing a reading lesson. This is as he's approaching. They're all smoochy and into each other, and he feels a little embarrassed to have come across this. So he backs away and goes to talk to Nellie. Nellie's like, oh, hey, what's up? She's all relaxed, singing a song, knitting or something. She's going to fill him in on what's happened. First of all, Heathcliff is dead.
Yeah.
Which is probably why everybody's pretty happy. But Nellie goes back a bit. She had gotten the call to go work at Wuthering Heights. This is a couple of weeks after Lockwood left. The situation was pretty much what Lockwood had seen. In the kitchen, Catherine would often sneak away to read whatever books she could find, some she dug out of Joseph's library. Hareton would also always go in there hiding from Heathcliff. Pretty soon, Catherine sort of had this change of heart. I mean, she was near suicide because things were so dire for her. But then she says, I'm going to make a positive decision. I'm going to be friends with Hareton. I'm going to start helping him out, teaching him how to read, and try and turn this situation into a positive one.
Take those lemons and make some lemonade.
That's right. Or at least some boiled milk. But so she gives him a book to work with. And at first he's all mad about it, but then he starts coming around. It says, Earnshaw was not to be civilized with a wish, and my young lady was no philosopher and no paragon of patience. But both their minds tending to the same point, one loving and desiring to esteem, and the other loving and desiring to be esteemed. They contrived in the end to reach it. They do it.
And Ellie says they seem to be totally in love and she can't wait for them to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads us into the penultimate chapter, 33. The morning after Kat gave Hareton the book, Kat and Heathcliff fight over the inheritance and her relationship with Hareton. Heathcliff grabs her and is going to smack her, but he looks her in the face and he sees something in her that reminds him of Catherine. That makes him let her go. He doesn't, mm-hmm, smack her. So Nellie says that all these reminders of Catherine, little Kat and Hareton, yeah, are softening Heathcliff to the point that to Nellie, it seems that he has lost his taste for revenge.
Right.
The final chapter, time passes and Heathcliff spends more and more time on his own and he's not eating much, one meal a day. I see why Lovecraft liked this story so much.
Well, his starvation is making him look pretty rough. It says, the light flashed on his features as I spoke. Oh, Mr. Lockwood, I cannot express what a terrible start I got by the momentary view. Those deep black eyes, that smile and ghastly paleness. It appeared to me not Mr. Heathcliff, but a goblin. And even in this last chapter, there's still some speculation on whether he's even human.
Yeah.
Nellie says, is he a ghoul or a vampire, I muse? I had read of such hideous incarnate demons. And then I set myself to reflect how I had tended him in infancy and watched him grow to youth and followed him almost through his whole course. And what absurd nonsense it was to yield to that sense of horror. Where did he come from, the little dark thing? Harbored by a good man to his bane, muttered Superstition. Even now, is he a human?
And I could see that's what Lovecraft was really latching onto, that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the fact that he might not have been human and been some demon or otherworldly creature that infected this family.
Yeah.
Yeah, after that fight that they have, he spends the whole night out walking and comes back all chipper, Heathcliff does. And he tells Nellie that he was on the threshold of hell, but now he has reached the side of heaven. And he tells Nellie that he wants to be alone in Wuthering Heights. And also, he's talking to someone who isn't there. Like, he's totally gone off the deep end.
Right.
He's mumbling Catherine's name, and he keeps reminding Nellie of his burial wishes alongside Catherine.
Right.
Soon after that, Nellie finds him dead. She tells Lockwood he's been buried and that Catherine and Harriton are to be married and will move into Thrushcross Grange. As she's telling Lockwood this stuff, he sees Catherine and Harriton coming back to the house, and he feels he really has to leave. It's not comfortable for him there anymore. And he gives both Nellie and Joseph some money. Why does he give him money?
He's just thanking him for the hospitality, but he doesn't want to be there when the happy couple comes in because, you know,
right,
he was somewhat of a suitor maybe and doesn't want to interfere.
So this is the end of the story as Lockwood leaves.
My walk home was lengthened by a diversion in the direction of the kirk. When beneath its walls, I perceived decay had made progress, even in 7 months. Many a window showed black gaps deprived of glass, and slates jutted off here and there, beyond the right line of the roof, to be gradually worked off in coming autumn storms. I sought and soon discovered the three headstones on the slope next to the moor, the middle one grey and half buried in the heath, Edgar Linton's only harmonized by the turf and moss creeping up its foot. Heathcliff's still bare. I lingered round them, under that benign sky, watched the moths fluttering among the heath and harebells, listened to the soft wind breathing through the grass, and wondered how anyone could ever imagine unquiet slumbers for the sleepers in that quiet earth.
And that's the end.
I do love that last sentence.
It's good.
It's really pretty.
And again, I think she was an exceptional writer. There's some amazing stuff in here. It's just some horrible characters that I don't have any affection for. One thing about this book, it doesn't really end with a bang. It sort of just slowly fades out.
Mm-hmm.
Gothic literature, typically, I think, tends to build into some big confrontation or dramatic conflict. But in the end, Heathcliff just sort of slowly gives up on being a jerk and dies.
Right.
So that brings us to next month. It's going to be a potpourri. We don't have any special theme for August this year. We're going to go with a little Clark Ashton Smith.
Alrighty.
The story is called The Seven Geishas. Hopefully that'll be a fun story to talk about. I haven't read it yet, but we'll be getting to it soon. I want to thank our reader, Rachel Lackey, for doing a phenomenal job this whole time.
Yeah.
She really delivers the goods, and she's great. So good job.
That's all we have for this week. So we'll be back with some Clark Ashton Smith. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
And I'm Chris Lackey. And Pfeiffer, I've got a little something for you at the end of this.
What's that?
You've been listening to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast at hppodcraft.com.
Yeah.
Windy moors, sweet rolling, falling green. You had a temper like my jealousy, too hot, too greedy. How could you leave me when I needed to possess you? I hated you, but I loved you too. Bad dreams in the night, they told me I was going to lose the fight. Leave behind my Wuthering, Wuthering, Wuthering Heights, Heathcliff. It's me, your Kathy, I've come home. I'm so cold, let me into your window. Heathcliff, it's me, your Kathy, I've come home. I'm so cold, let me into your window. Ooh, it gets dark, it gets lonely on the other side from you. I pine a lot, I find the lot falls through without you. I'm coming back, love, cruel Heathcliff, my one dream, my only master. Too long I roam in the night, I'm coming back to his side to put it right. I'm coming home to Wuthering, Wuthering, Wuthering Heights, Heathcliff. It's me, I'm Kathy, I've come home. I'm so cold, let me into your window. Heathcliff, it's me, oh Kathy, I've come home. I'm so cold, let me into your window. Ooh. Let me have it. Let me grab your soul away. Let me have it. Let me grab your soul away. You know, it's me, Kathy. Heathcliff, it's me, your Kathy. I've come home, I'm so cold. Let me into your window. Heathcliff, it's me, your Kathy. I've come home, I'm so cold. Let me into your window. Heathcliff, it's me, your Kathy. I've come home, I'm so cold.